This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us Eric Bodell.
And I'm Mark Lawrence. Now, Eric, I came to Palmerston North in 1973. At that stage, there was only one radio station in Palmerston North. It was called 2ZA, and it was a commercial radio station. You were in Palmerston North a long time before that. What are your experiences with radio in the family environment?
Well, the radio really was the entertainment hub for the whole household. From my age of three onwards, we listened to things on the radio. Now, I have a real problem trying to remember what it was we actually listened to, but as far as the programs were concerned. But, yeah, I remember we spent Sundays and things like that, having Sunday lunch, listening to music and that sort of thing. Whereas once television came along, that kind of stopped, and it was our system changed.
And things like Garner's Request Session, you remember that?
They do, yeah, I do remember there was Garner's Request Session, and there was another program, and I can't remember, but it was to do with Collinson and Sons and Collinson and Cunningham.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, and we used to listen to that as well.
There were people, of course, who wanted non-commercial radio, and in those days you could pick up a reasonable signal during the daytime from the high-powered national program transmitter at Titahi Bay near Wellington. But the problem with that was that at night time it faded badly and there was distortion. It was really unlistenable at night time. So I think it was in the late 70s, probably about 1979, that they installed a national program repeater in Gillespie's line alongside 2ZA.
Yes, I remember that really well because I was party to some of the installation. I do recall that the very first transmitter was in a caravan, and it was a Toshiba 1 kilowatt transmitter. I do remember that. And the previous couple of weeks, our scientific gurus had been out to the what they called the aerial tuning unit and added extra hardware and various bits and pieces to make it possible to connect both of these transmitters into it. How the signal got from the caravan to the tower, I'm not sure. I have a feeling there may have been multiple coaxes laid originally, so that's probably what they did there. And that stayed like that for a long time. I do have to say that one of the concerns that they all had about that particular site is that it was on a floodplain, and they were quite concerned that if it ever did flood, the caravan would be the first thing that would float away.
Yes. Yes, well, I was working with you on Tuesday at that time, and I remember the national program, the transmitter and the caravan. One New Year's Eve, it failed. It rained heavily, and that station went off the air. I went out to find out why, and rain had been leaking through the roof of the caravan and had drowned the transmitter, so it was a job getting that back on air again. But that 2AM did fill a need for, as I said, people who didn't like commercial radio, and it also at times broadcast local breakout programs.
Yes, I remember I was one of the members of the 2ZA staff, and I had a count at the staff list at the time, and I think there were 57 staff members worked at 2ZA and George Street. How we ever all fitted in the building, I don't know, but we did. And we cohabited really well together as well, which is really awesome. And with the introduction of 2IM, the workload of the technicians, the technical staff at 2ZA, suddenly increased because we had to input programs into 2ZA and go out and record them. But we also then had to go and do the same for 2IM and the national program, because not only did it go into 2IM, it also went to Wellington and got shared with their services as well. So
it was interesting that in those days there was a technical staff of about 8. These days radio stations get by without any technical staff because of the modern technology.
it's a sad day because at the end of the day, Tuesday now, as I understand it, has a staff of five. Okay. So there's not many. And from what I understand, there might be a couple of announcers and the rest of them are all sales, just commercial sellers, I guess is the best way to describe them.
In those days, there was no such thing as private radio, but I think if you remember the Pirates in Auckland, Radio Hauraki, they set the ball rolling, and after that, the government gave in and said, OK, well, we can have private radio stations. So the first private radio station in Palmerston North was
2XS on 828 kilohertz. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, and it caused a little bit of excitement, but once it was established, things settled down again, and we heard very little beyond that point until the introduction of FM. And yes. Then that kind of really opened the jar of lollies, and next thing there was all sorts of things popping out of the woodwork all over. Numerous FM stations. Originally there was only like the concert program and ZM, which was Tuesday's other commercial station that they had established, and 2XS had 92.2, and I can't remember what they called that, but it was that was there. And then they decided then also to include the Breeze, which was the 828 service, which was the AM service that they did.
Yes. Commercial radio was, and I suppose it still is very competitive, and they ran regular audience surveys to find out who was listening to which station and how big an audience they had, because it was that on that they could sell their advertising.
Yeah, they frequently did these audience researches, and it did flip-flop between the two of them quite often. Tuesday was good, then 2XS got good, and then Tuesday thought of another idea, and it was kind of very, very competitive, in fact.
Nowadays, radio stations have gone into networking in a big way, so you don't really know where the program is originating from. So it could be National Radio as an example. It could be coming from Wellington, it could be coming from Auckland. And yesterday I heard coming from Christchurch. Well, you know, where is our radio station based these days? We really don't know.
No, it could be almost anywhere. You just don't know. Depends on where. If there is something of note to contribute, they'll play it and make it happen from wherever. It's kind of a bit sad in a way, because I notice that a lot of the radio stations now don't even have a studio in the town that they're coming from. The technology has moved forward to a degree where these people are actually working from a suitcase in home, and they contribute their program, and then the next person jumps in and it switches to their suitcase and carries on. I don't know. You know, to me, I believe that the whole purpose of a radio station is so there's some interaction between all the staff and you all work in the same direction. Whereas when you're sitting in your own studio room or whatever you call it at home, how do you get that camaraderie?
Yes. And not knowing where a radio station is based creates a problem to my way of thinking about civil defence emergencies. If there's an emergency in a particular town and the local radio station's not even originating from that town, must make things difficult to get.
It was actually the civil defence emergencies that have happened have actually caused a few knee-jerk reactions as well. I remember back in 1997 there was a series of events happened over in the Tararua district, and the civil defence people there, I was in the fire brigade at the time and I remember it happening, they wanted broadcasts made to tell the people of Woodville that they could get a bed and they could get a feed at the local community centre. And apparently the radio stations in Palmerston North were telephoned and civil defence got told, well, I'm sorry, there's nobody here, we don't have the staff available to do that. And so they had to find other ways of doing it. It was door knocking, and in fact, we got involved in that in as much as that we went around the doors and knocked on, you know, people's front doors and said, if you're struggling, please, you know, grab your snap bag and head off down to the community centre and they'll look after you there. And that's actually where the little low-power FM stations actually really came into being, because I remember being asked by the local town organisation, they all have a Main Street committee or whatever, and they wanted me to come up with a way of broadcasting in the town, in the streets, and street speakers for a start. And unfortunately, it gets really difficult when you've got to jump across streets and roadways to get the speakers from one block to the next. And that's when I discovered, by talking to the radio frequency people in Wellington, that there are actually frequencies available that can be used for that purpose. And that's what when Radio Woodville first came about, 1998.
Mm. Yes, there's quite a few. I believe I did a count, and I believe there's about 10 low-power FM stations in Palmerston North area.
Mm. I think you're probably not far off the mark, actually. They seem to come and go a bit. It's, well, certainly for Radio Woodville, it's been going for 27 years or whatever, and it's still going to this day so far, touch wood. And the thing that makes it a viable proposition is the fact that it's owned and operated by volunteers, so there's no wages to pay, and the overheads for the station are actually quite low. So the building that they're in doesn't cost a lot of rent. They don't spend a lot of money on telephone and those sorts of things. So they don't spend money on buying records and equipment and things like that. So it does make it quite viable. And I think a lot of the low-power FMs have come about simply because you don't need a huge bank balance to make it happen.
There's at least one low-power FM station in Ashurst.
Yes, yep, yeah. Ashurst Village Radio. Oh. Surprise, surprise.
Good.
Yeah, yeah, so that's good. There is another one. It is a religious-based program, and it actually comes from Pohangana Valley rather than Ashurst itself. So, yeah.
Yes, so there are quite a number of religious-based radio stations.
One of the things that you touched on was these civil emergencies, and one of the things that is a bit frightening is that it's all good and well while everything is good and going, but as we're speaking, there's events happening up the northern end of New Zealand, and it's causing a lot of headaches, flooding, bridges washed out and things like that. Unfortunately, a lot of the infrastructure that we rely on for that communication to happen happens to be more digital, fibre optic and all these sorts of things. And Cyclone Gabrielle highlighted a serious problem in that the whole of the Hawke's Bay was suddenly cut off from the rest of the world because they didn't have the fibre optic cables got washed away down rivers and ceased to exist. The radio linking that used to exist didn't seem to be working for a number of reasons. A, the generators ran out of fuel, and that is a problem. And something like 157 cell phone sites stopped working because they didn't have any standby power. And to me, that kind of makes the whole system not that reliable. And I believe when I first started radio, we were always trying to have plan A and plan B so that we could keep going forever no matter what. So, but it seems that doesn't happen these days.
I have to give personal credit to RNZ National, because several years back when the Kaikoura earthquake struck, we were staying at a holiday park in a cabin that was right on the beach frontage, and about midnight, I think it was, there was this great earthquake, great shaking, and my wife said, we're not staying here any longer, there might be a tsunami. So we packed up and headed home. And I thought, well, how do we get any information while we're travelling? And the RNZ National had come into gear, and they got staff in who ran it, and they informed us all the way home of what was happening and what roads were closed and so on. So we knew before we got to the Manawatu Gorge that we would be able to get through the gorge that hadn't been closed.
Yeah, yeah. I understand exactly what you're saying. One of the things that made me laugh during the Kaikoura earthquake, in fact, was that TVNZ were busy broadcasting all these messages, they seemed completely oblivious of the fact that, A, there was no power down there, so nobody could have their TVs on, and they were broadcasting for the rest of New Zealand, who really didn't care. So it was kind of a bit of a waste of time.
Yes, yes. Mm. The Civil Defence website, I checked this morning, and it says to listen to your radio, and it suggests RNZ, The Hits, More FM, and News Talk ZB as being the stations to listen to.
Mm.
But as you say, then you've got these very local ones that can be very valuable as well.
Certainly Radio Woodville has had three occasions now where we've stepped in and done a lot of broadcasting to help the local people of the community, because things like we had a snowfall, and I can't remember the year that it happened, but it wasn't long after the station had been established, and there were something like 57 people looking for a bed or somewhere to sleep. There's only three motels at the time, and they had like four rooms each, so that wasn't going to cut the mustard. And also they wanted a feed, and there was nobody open to give them food. So that's when we started steering them, asking for people to, if they've got any food that they can contribute towards feeding these people. They did, and they again rushed it down to the community centre, and these people were bedded and fed over 53 people because of it. So it does work.
Yes. Yes, 20, 30 years ago, radio was all AM broadcasting, but there's very little left of AM these days. I think there's only in the Palmerston North area, there's only three radio stations still on AM that are all on FM, but now it's going a step further, and a lot of these stations are now streaming on the internet. So how long is FM going to last? Mind you, you really can't use streaming when you're travelling.
I'm not sure where technology is at that point in time about streaming, listening to streaming while you're travelling along. I think you can do it.
I
don't know. Now, I think at the end of the day, the thing that saved a lot of people in the Hawke's Bay was the fact that 2ZC stayed on the air, and they were able to broadcast on AM, surprise, surprise, to the local people. Mount Erin was off. There was no TV, there was no FM, nothing. And I'm not sure, to this day, I'm not privy to knowing why that happened, but it did. And as I said, there's a lot of places up and down the country that are linked through Mount Erin that stopped as well. So it was difficult. It was a difficult time for everybody.
Yes, Hawke's Bay reminds me of my younger days when I was living in Napier. And I was interested in radio at that stage. And it was the early days of stereo sound. There certainly wasn't any stereo broadcasting. But the senior technician at the radio station in Napier wanted to experiment with stereo broadcasting. In Napier, there were two transmitters. One was the non-commercial 2YZ, and then there was the commercial one, 2ZC. So one night after midnight, after these stations had closed, he turned the transmitters back on again, and he broadcast stereo, left channel over one transmitter and the right channel over and the other transmitter, which of course required two radios, one tuned to one station and the other tuned to another station.
One on the left side, one on the right side. What do you want?
That's right, exactly.
They did some experiments from Opapa. I do remember reading about where they did. There was a system of modulation that would allow you to broadcast stereo, and clearly that wasn't very successful because it didn't ever take off. So,
in England, I'm not sure about the United States, but in England they tried out, and I think they're still using digital radio broadcasting.
DRM. Mm.
Is there a future for that?
Look, to be honest, I don't know. I don't believe I've seen any DRM receivers in New Zealand yet. And I've looked at a few cars and things like that, and even they don't have them. But then we don't import many cars from England anyway, so kind of the chance of getting a car that will do that will depend on good luck rather than good management, I think.
And the effect of TV on radio, obviously you've had experience where people just going across to TV, or in the early days anyway, and gave up on radio because they were watching TV.
Yeah, in the early days before television came along, the radio was there and the family did things together. We played games together and all sorts of things. You know, we had used to have table games, and I can remember playing checkers and various card games. And Euchre was one that we used to play at home. And all the family, there were six members in my family, and we all learned how to play euchre because it was good, because we could all team up against each other, girls against boys, and it worked. But when television came along, suddenly we became, I don't know, we didn't do any of that anymore. It sort of stopped. It kind of lost its flavour, I guess, or something, I don't know. But sad, really, because it was, I think they were good times, and we learned a lot about each other, you know, and when we interfaced with each other, we sort of learned about what we were doing and things like that. As time progressed, we learned less and less about each other, and to the point now, and the family unit was one very cohesive group, whereas nowadays, well, certainly in my case, the family group seems to have completely dissolved. It's just not there anymore, so, yeah.
Well, TV's going the way of radio, isn't it? There's so many TV channels around these days. You don't know where they're originating from, what sort of programs they're carrying.
And the thing that is most irritating about, well, radio and television, is the number of commercials that are broadcast continually every 5 minutes. And you think to yourself, well, I just want entertainment. I don't want to be listening and be, have it rammed down my throat that I should be buying, you know, slippers from Hannah's and you know, clothes from wherever. So it's kind of hard. That sort of thing is hard. And television, unfortunately, there's a little green man that keeps jumping up on the screen all the time wanting to sell you life insurance. And my attitude is, if I want it, I'll go and find it. And I don't need people to keep telling me over and over and over that I should be getting it. You know, it just, doesn't do anything for me.
Maybe TV could do what the internet does. Is if you pay a bit of money, you get an advert-free programming.
Well, that's what was supposed to be with various services on television. In days, more recent times, you could get a channel and pay good money for it. And this is where Sky Television was born, I guess, at the end of the day. Hey, we have all these programs and we don't have any advertising, which was really great. Except somehow somebody's managed to sneak these in more and more and more, to the point now where they're back like normal television channels. You get more ads than you do programs. So, and that's why people are moving away to the streaming, because some of the streaming is really good and it doesn't have any interruptions caused by commercial content.
True, yes. Advertising is a big thing these days. Trying to chase that dollar.
That's the thing. And unfortunately, the more competition there is out there, like radio stations increasing in number, to the point where I think there's something like 23 FM stations originating from Mount Warratty, and plus more in the city as well. There's some more localised things in Palmerston North. And the trouble is, the more stations you have, the more money you need to keep them afloat, which means the more advertising you've got to go and sell, which means the more staff have to work harder to make it happen. And unfortunately, it just, I don't know, it's an uphill battle.
Do you remember when New Zealand did away with radio TV licences?
No, but it was the 70s, perhaps. I do recall around about then that the government of the day, and I can't remember. In fact, I think it might have come about not long or during, perhaps. What happened in 1975 was the then government, and I think it was a Labor government, decided to break broadcasting, and it was the NZBC, and they decided to break it into four corporations. And I know this because I got a letter telling me. And I was given the option to either work for TV1, TV2, the symphony orchestra of all things, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, right, I can't play a musical instrument to save myself. And the last one was radio, and it was, I can't even remember what they call themselves. I think it was just RNZ is what it was called. And we got the option, we got a choice to, because the organisation that I worked for, which was head office engineering section, was being disestablished. They decided they didn't need it. Actually, they did, but anyway, that's right. And we were given the option, we need you to fall into one of these four areas, and we need you to make your decision within 2 weeks, which we did. And my decision was to go to radio, which I did, and ended up in Broadcasting House in Wellington, which was, that in itself was I always have had a passion for working in radio, and it that was really the first step in heading towards where I really wanted to be. Interestingly, after this was established, this Forks Corporation group was established, they suddenly realised, well, actually, we need a fifth one, and we need to have a services group, because we need somebody to supply us with the spare parts, because we can't get them ourselves. And initially what happened is TV1 were buying spare parts, TV2 were buying spare parts and the same parts, different suppliers. And RNZ, I think, did that to a degree as well. And the amount of product they needed to buy to keep the place going was horrendously expensive. And they needed to have a group of people that were solely focused on providing those parts, because RNZ at that stage was starting to downsize in staff numbers, and they didn't have the people available to do that sort of work. Mm. So it was kind of, yeah, it was a snowball effect, really.
Coming back to licences, it's interesting that the United Kingdom or England still has licences, and it's causing a big hoo-ha over there at the moment. And people are saying it's only because of the BBC, all the funds from licences go to the BBC, and people are saying, we don't listen to the BBC, why should we have a licence? And it is causing problems.
I saw firsthand some people that had to have a licence for TV and radio, and occasionally the inspectors would do a series of door knocks to find out if you had a TV or not. And so they never had any outside TV antennas, because that was a giveaway for a start. And they would come into the house, and if there was a TV going, they'd want to know where your licence was. And frequently the excuse apparently was, oh, well, it's a TV, but it doesn't go. So that was the end of the argument. So
yeah, well, I can be guilty of avoiding the inspectors, and I hid my TV aerial under a tiled roof of the house, so it was not visible from the outside.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.